Daniel chapter 2, it'd be really useful if you could turn to a Bible. If you haven't got a Bible with you, then I think there are some up in the rack at the back would be really useful to turn to. And I just encourage you to do that because I could be reading anything and I could be telling you anything. I want you to go and weigh it up and assess what I'm saying. But Daniel chapter 2, I've been looking at the book of Daniel over the past few months, really. I'm doing a teaching thing for the Christian Union up at Kiel in November, and they asked me to preach on the book of Daniel. And they were very generous. They turned around and said, there are 12 chapters in the book of Daniel. We want you to do 4 sessions. So that's 3 chapters a session. And we will give you 20 minutes in each session to preach. I said to them, I couldn't even read the 3 chapters in 20 minutes, let alone preach on them. So you get what you get and you'd be happy with it. But as I've read through the book of Daniel, I've just begun to realize, I think a couple of weeks ago I spoke in Daniel chapter 1, and I just began to realize how relevant Daniel is for today. Because this is a book about a nation living in a foreign land. That's what it's about. And the central theme of Daniel is not the prophecies. We as Pentecostals got really excited about the prophecies and the end time stuff. But the central theme of Daniel is that God is sovereign. He is in control. That's the central theme of the book of Daniel. Running the whole way through it, no matter what goes on, no matter what persecution you face, no matter what lies in the future, God is in control. And that's a good thing to know. It definitely is a good thing to know. But my question to you tonight is, how do you respond to the impossible? Have you ever faced the impossible in life? I've faced the impossible in life. I've faced the impossible in life as I've brought up 2 boys into their teenage years and now into 2 young men, where they make decisions at times that I wouldn't want them to make, and they do things that I wouldn't want them to do. And I have learned that it's impossible because I have no control over it. Because they do what they want, because they're adults now. Anybody else the same situation? And there's lots of situations we face in life that are impossible. When the doctor turns around and says it's that diagnosis that you dreaded all of your life, it's an impossible situation. There's nothing you can physically do about it. So how do we respond to the impossible? This is what it says in Nebuchadnezzar, in Daniel chapter 2. It's about Nebuchadnezzar, and it says this. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams in his mind that was troubled, and he could not sleep. So he summoned the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came and stood before the king, he said to them, I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means. Then the astrologers answered the king, may the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it. The king replied to the astrologers, this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut to pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. That tends to sharpen the mind a little bit, doesn't it? But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me. Once more they replied, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it. Then the king answered, I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realized that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you know or you can interpret it for me. The astrologers answered the king, there's no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great or mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans. This made the king so angry that and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and the men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. Then Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon. Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact, and he asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" And Arioch explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went to the king and asked him for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to the house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and he urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning the mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in the darkness. The light dwells with him. I thank and I praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king." What an amazing story about this dream. And you know, there's people who have said things about impossibilities in the past and history. Alexander the Great said this: "There is nothing impossible to him who tries." Napoleon Bonaparte said, "The word is impossible is not in my dictionary." Remember the song? "I dreamed the impossible dream." There's lots of things that are said about impossibilities, aren't they? And people tend to try impossible things in life. You know, there's people, I've a friend of mine who's about 2 years younger than me, and he's just competed one of these Ironman challenges. He's done running for so many miles, he's cycled for so many miles, and he's swum for so many miles. Idiot. There's people who set a challenge of turning around and memorizing the whole of the Bible. I know people who've tried to do that and memorize maybe the whole of the New Testament or the whole of the Old Testament. Other people enjoy doing puzzles, Sudoku. I hate them. I think they're of the devil. People enjoy doing jigsaws. I have no patience for that either. Rubik's Cube, whatever it is, we enjoy doing things that stretch us and challenge us a bit. Possibilities. But you know, there's a difference between something that stretches us and challenges us and a situation that genuinely is impossible for us to do anything about. And we see in Daniel chapter 2 three different groups of people, and we see their response to the impossible. The first person we see in Daniel chapter 3 is King Nebuchadnezzar himself. He was outwardly impressive. He was the king. He was a king. He had got money. He had got status. He had got power. He had got authority. But inwardly, he had nothing. And we see that through Nebuchadnezzar's story in the book of Daniel. When you think of a king, when you think of a ruler, when you think of the prime minister or the president of America, do you know what normally comes to our mind? Is someone who's got absolute power and authority. Unfortunately, as we look at Boris Johnson at the minute, we realize he doesn't have an awful lot of power and authority. You can imagine Nebuchadnezzar with his incredible wealth and accomplishments. I used to have a book when I was a kid growing up, and in that book was the seven wonders of the world. And there were different things in it, like the pyramids of Giza, and there was this the big statue that stood in over in Turkey, over the harbor. I can't remember the name of it, Alexandria, I think it was. And there, but one of the great wonders of the seven wonders of the world was the gardens of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar is reputed to be the man who built the gardens of Babylon. In all of their beauty, they were so incredible that they became a wonder of the world. He built walls around the city of Babylon, and the walls are claimed to be over 56 miles long, these walls. And they were so wide that people used to carry out chariot races around the walls of Babylon against each other. He was a mighty king. He was the biggest empire the world had known at that time. He had people just doing whatever he asked, and his authority was absolute. When he said that the wise men to be put to death, do you know what happened to the wise men? They were put to death. His authority was absolute. That's why when people came to him, they didn't turn around and say, "Hey, Nebi, how are you doing?" They turned around and they started with, "O King, live forever." Nebuchadnezzar, as we find out later in the book of Daniel, had a bit of a God complex. The power completely went to Nebuchadnezzar's head. But I think if any of us here were asked tonight, would we like to be king? Would we like to be queen? How many of us would like to have Boris's job or Donald's job in America? Because you know what? I think most of us wouldn't mind their paycheck at the end of the week, but we just wouldn't want the hassle and the responsibility, would we? I don't know how anybody copes with that pressure. If I was Boris, I would just turn around and say, forget it and go home. It's amazing that someone who has everything, at his disposal and everyone at his disposal, can still be troubled in his mind. Because Nebuchadnezzar, in theory, he'd got authority over, there was nothing impossible for Nebuchadnezzar. He had conquered nation upon nation. But yet and we all, he couldn't control what was going on in his mind. He couldn't control the dreams that he had. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had Christine sharing about a dream. And that last week, we had Christine sharing about a dream. And I don't know about you, they tell me that every night we dream, and we maybe dream two or three times. I never remember any of my dreams, never remember anything about them. But he obviously had a dream that really, really troubled him. And in that culture, in that Eastern culture, having a dream that you could not remember was a really bad omen. It was a bad sign. It meant that trouble was on the horizon. Something bad was going to happen to you, or God was very angry with you. And as Nebuchadnezzar mulled that over, he became more and more anxious, more irate. And he just turned around and says, You know what you do when you can't sort things out yourself? You take it out on other people, don't we? And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did. He couldn't sort it. He couldn't come up with the solution. So he turned around and said, "You know what, you guys, I don't want you just to interpret the dream. I want you to tell me what the dream was." It's one thing if Rob comes to me tomorrow morning and says, "Pastor, I had a dream about you. And I had a dream, Pastor, that you were the most wise, handsome pastor that I had ever walked the face of the earth. Can you interpret that for me?" And I would say, "Rob, I can interpret that for you. The Lord has shown you great truth and wisdom, Rob." But if Rob came to me tomorrow and said to me, "Pastor, I had a dream last night. Can you tell me what the dream was? And can you interpret the dream for me?" this part of me would be thinking to myself, I wonder, does he not know what the dream was? If he didn't know what the dream was, I could maybe pull a fast one and tell him anything. But if he did know what the dream was, then I'm in big trouble. And Nebuchadnezzar just found himself in that position where he just didn't know. He didn't know what it meant. He wasn't even 100% sure what it was. And it just shows you that the position of power, there can become great insecurity behind it. How many of you have read The Wizard of Oz? Have you not read The Wizard of Oz? The Wizard of Oz, or watched the movie, and The Wizard of Oz, there's the story of following the yellow brick road to meet the Great Oz. The Great Oz was the greatest ruler that had ever ruled anywhere in the planet, and Dorothy went off with the Scarecrow and the Lion and the Tin Man to meet this Great Oz, this man who was full of wisdom and power and miracles and wonders. And when they went to see the Great Oz, after a whole series of things that went on, they discovered it was just a little man sitting behind a curtain with a lot of mechanical stuff and making stuff up as he went along. He wasn't this great character that people had thought he was or portrayed that he was. He was just someone who was totally insecure. It was all a front. Nebuchadnezzar looked as if he had it all in control, but actually he was very insecure and very out of control. And then we have the king's advisors as well. And these guys were, I suppose in modern day terms, these guys would be counselors or psychiatrists or therapists, people who were paid to actually figure us out and give us an understanding of what's going on in our head, because sometimes we need someone to tell us what's going on in our own heads. And these guys were paid by the king and had very privileged positions. They were astrologers and sorcerers and enchanters and people who basically told the king what to do and where to go. They lived in a very supernatural age at that time where they believed in all of this stuff. They believed that men could seek what the gods were saying or what was happening in history or in the future, and they could find it. And you read accounts of people, and what they would do is they would get some giblets from a turkey and throw them in a plate, and they would tell you what was happening in the future by the giblets. We have people today who go when we go and pay big money to go and see people read their tea leaves. It's amazing that in this day and age that one of the columns that they never get rid of in the newspaper is the stars. Do you know what I mean? And you could read your stars every day and you could tick it off and say, yeah, that's 100% right, because it's that vague you could drive a bus through it. But people always look for answers. And Nebuchadnezzar turns to these men who were in a really good job with really good benefits and were really on Cush Street. But you know what? They couldn't tell what his dream was. They couldn't even begin to understand what his dream was. I guess it must have been a real shock for them, because when you've got a good lifestyle advising the king, when you're eating good food and wearing good clothes and have good houses and being paid loads of money, and then all of a sudden you wake up one morning and the king says, I'm not going to tell you what the dream is. You tell me what the dream is. Do you know what? The wheels start coming off everything. And you sort of think, everything is going. Everything's gone. And they complain to the king. And they say, King, what you're asking is not fair. No one can do it. No one could do it. What you find in the book of Daniel over and over again is that the gods that the Babylonians worship are just exposed as having no power and no authority over and over and over again. And the gods that these men worship could not give them the answer. What they were normally used to was, you give me X and I'll give you Y. You give me this and I'll give you that. But Nebuchadnezzar wasn't giving them anything. And they didn't know what to do. The goalposts had changed, and they were just completely out of their depth. In fact, this is what they said. They said, "No one on earth can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult." And then they said this, "No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they don't even live amongst the humans." See, the gods they worshipped were gods up in the sky. Gods who never, ever connected with the human race. They were gods who moved people about the board like chess pieces, but weren't really interested. And the gods would never speak to humanity. They would never show them what to do. You know, the reality is in our society, we have lots of people who advise us and lots of people who tell us what to do. And, you know, their gods are maybe different things. I think we learn from our parliament, from our institutions, our political institutions, that some people lead us from the position of how do we make more money. Some people lead us at times from the position of how do we keep everybody else in their place. I think what we're seeing in parliament at the minute is how do we lead this nation but still keep ourselves in a good job? And that's the reality. We all have got our motivation, and those people have motivations the same as us. And that's their gods. I'm not saying that there's people who are in parliament that don't have the heart of the people at the front of their mind. I think there are. But I think there's so much politics and what goes on, it's just ridiculous. They had no one to turn to. They had no one to give them an answer. You know, the reality of this whole saga that's going on in Parliament at the minute is, I don't know about you, but I thought that the other day when Boris came back with a deal, I thought, at last, this whole thing is over. Because I don't know, but I'm just sick to death of it. I really couldn't care less what happens anymore. I just want the end of it so we can talk about normal things again. But you know, it shows you that the best laid plans of mice and men. These things are too difficult. There's nothing we can do. So how can we respond to the impossible when things are too difficult and there's nothing else that we can do? I think Daniel gives us the perfect example of how we can respond to the impossible. Because you know what Daniel does? He gets his prayer group together and he starts to seek the face of God. Daniel makes a statement and says, there's nothing too difficult for God. See, Daniel's life was on the line here. He didn't even really know what's going on according to the story. All that happened was that the army had come basically to arrest him. The security guards had come to arrest him, to carry him off like the rest of the wise men to be executed. But Daniel responded differently, because Daniel did not panic when the impossible came. Daniel did not. Life didn't fall to pieces for Daniel. Daniel just said, can you give me a bit of time? Because I think if you give me a bit of time and I seek the face of God, my God can give me an answer to this. When Daniel prayed, the God of heaven heard his cries. And I want to tell you tonight that God hears your cries. You know, there may be no one else in this church that sees the times when you weep on your pillow, but God sees it. There may be no one else in this church that knows the times that you've wrestled over stuff going on either in your own life or your family's life, and you really haven't known where to turn. No one else maybe in this church knows the times that you've been on the brink of depression or breakdown because something has been too heavy for you to carry. But God hears those cries. He hears those moments. And he isn't a God who just turns around and turns his back on them. He's a God who hears and answers prayer. This is what Daniel says. Daniel says in his prayer, he says, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever." And Daniel recognizes that people can be wise. We can be the most intelligent people on the planet, but the source of all wisdom is God's. And he says, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his." The power does not lie in Nebuchadnezzar. The power lies in the God of all creation. The power does not lie in Donald Trump or Boris Johnson or whoever it is. Thank God. It lies in the God of all creation. And the wisdom for it all lies in the God of all creation as well. It's God who changes the times and the seasons. It's God who sets up kings and removes them again. It's not the kings who does it. It's not our local elections that does it. It's God that does it. He gives wisdom to the wise. Do you know why they're wise? Because they seek wisdom. There's some people who aren't wise and they have no interest in being wise. And they've no interest in seeking wisdom. But the word of God says in James that when you pray for wisdom, God will give it to you. There's lots of things that we can pray for, and there's no guarantee in the Bible that we get it. But wisdom is the one thing that we are guaranteed we get because he says he'll give it to us. He says he gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. It says he reveals the deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in the darkness. And the light dwells in him. I don't know how dark your situations have been, but darkness is nothing to God. He's got x-ray vision. He's got night vision. He can see through the darkness. He knows what lies ahead of you. And you know what? When you come and seek his face, he'll prepare you to walk through it. He says, "I thank and I praise you, God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and power, and you have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king." I believe with all my heart that God never sets out to disappoint us, never sets out to embarrass us, never sets out to fail us. But when we are people who seek the heart and the face of God, God always comes through. He always comes through. He will never leave us or abandon us. And he will guide our steps. And he will give us wisdom for the journey. Yeah, it may not be today. You may need to be persistent in prayer. Even Daniel asked for more time. But God always comes through. Daniel, in the middle of being faced with a king who looked as if he had it all together, but below it all was incredibly insecure. In the middle of seeing all these wise men who were living in a really handy number, and they looked as if they had got everything, but the reality is that when they were faced with it, they said, "We just can't do this." You know what Daniel's response is? His response is, "Do you know what? I can't do anything. But to my God, nothing is impossible." Do you you believe in the God of the impossible? Do you really believe in the God of the impossible? I think it's something we need to hold on to. Let me just give you a few really brief thoughts just as a pull this to a close tonight. A few thoughts that help us to trust this God of the impossible. The first thought is this. In Daniel chapter 2, we find a God who speaks and reveals himself. I want to tell you today that God still speaks today. He still speaks today. This is not just something consigned to a few thousand years ago. God still speaks today, and he will speak into your situation today if you will seek his face and set time aside to spend with him. Second thing that this reveals about God is that our God always responds to faith. He always responds to faith. And you know when faith is tested? Faith is tested when we don't seem to get the answer we want. But you know what? When we don't get the answer we want, sometimes all we can do is cling on to God. And God always responds to faith. Third thing that this story reveals to us is that God always comes through. But sometimes he always comes through just on time. Just on time. We would like him to come through earlier, wouldn't we? We wouldn't have to get through the stress and the hassle of it. You know, basically, Daniel's there with the prison wagon at the front door. But God always comes through in his time, and his time's always perfect. But he always comes through when we seek his face. Fourth thing is this, that God always breaks through in an atmosphere of praise and worship. Daniel's prayer doesn't start off, God, I really need you to dig me out of a hole because I'm in so much trouble. God, I'm going to be carted off to prison. I'm going to die. Life is so miserable for me. God, how are you going to sort this out? And you, sometimes our prayer life can become a bit like that. But what Daniel's prayer starts off with is, praise be to the name of God who forever and ever wisdom and power is his. And he goes on and he worships God and he praises God and he gives glory to God. And you know what we have discovered in this church, and Pastor Williams has almost thumped this into my head, that praise always brings breakthrough, it always brings victory, because when God is exalted, his enemies are scattered. You want breakthrough? Learn to praise. Learn to worship. Fifth thing that this story reveals is this. That God always gives us an opportunity. In the midst of answering prayers, he always gives us an opportunity to witness to others and give glory to his name. You, when Daniel went and told Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't turn around to Nebuchadnezzar and said, Nebuchadnezzar, I've got the answer to your dream. I've figured it all out. He said, God revealed it. The Most High God revealed this. You know, when God answers your prayers, when God does a miracle in your life, he always does it so glory goes back to himself again. So be prepared to share it. The final thing I want to share tonight is this. And the final thing that this chapter, part, this half of the chapter really reveals to us is this. That God exalts the humble. Daniel wasn't full of himself. Sometimes I meet people who are really full of themselves, and it really irritates me. I don't like people like that. But I've discovered that God likes them even less, because God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. None of this story, if you read the whole book of Daniel, none of it is ever about Daniel. It's always about God. You know, if you go on, you can go on in the rest of the chapter. I would encourage you to do it when you go home, but the rest of the chapter is about Daniel's dream. And he dreams. And he dreams about these empires rising up one after the other. And there's lots of people have different interpretations of the empires and what it all means. And this mighty statue. But it says at the end of the dream, it says that there is a rock. And it says that this rock hits the statue and smashes it to pieces. I think what's great comfort to us at this time in our nation's history is that empires may rise, and empires will rise. The British Empire was the greatest empire that ever was in the face of this earth. And they will rise, but empires will also fall. But you know what has got the power to break all of it? The rock. The rock that is Christ Jesus, because his empire will never end. The kingdom of God will never end. We can survive when we face the impossible, because our God is a God who hears and answers prayer. What is impossible to man is not impossible to God. But more than that, we see even in this chapter that what seems impossible, with all of these nations rising, and many of them were wicked nations, many of them caused a miserable amount of damage. But you know, at the end of it all, the rock breaks through, because Jesus is sovereign over all.